Hey everyone, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 120. Today we're here with Josh, who joins us from Nashville. Josh, thanks for joining.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on. It's been a long time in the works. Schedules have gotten in the way, so appreciate your patience. We sort of started talking on Twitter, and you are a yoga instructor on the side, and I've seen some of your tweets about it, and so we started talking about doing an episode about, you know, fish in general, but and your fish experience, but also the crossover between yoga and fish, and I'm really excited about it. So thanks for being willing to do it.
Two of my favorite things, yoga and fish.
So before we get into the conversation, I guess we're just one of the cool thing that if people haven't seen, this episode will go up a couple of days from now. But last night Trey sat in with Tedeschi Trucks Band in at the Beacon. Did you catch that video, Josh?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I love Derek Trucks anyway, and Tedeschi Trucks Band is amazing. They'll be here for I think three shows in Nashville at the Ryman coming up. So I'm definitely going to get into that.
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah. And before we started recording, we talked a little bit about the music scene there. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but no shortage of live music for you, huh?
No, not at all. I'm spoiled.
And we have the MSG run coming up in a couple of months, which we're pretty psyched about. Are you going to make it up for any of those?
I'm not. I did last seven of the Baker's Dozen run, and so that kind of was my fish funding for the summer.
Yeah, right. Yep, everyone's got their fish funding.
Yep.
Cool. Well, and we're also, just so people know, we're going to do something a little bit different. Josh came up with some tracks that make up about an hour long vinyasa flow yoga class, and it's built from several fish jams from over the years, and it's pretty cool, pretty exciting. So that's what you'll hear at the end, and I think even if you're not into yoga, you'll appreciate the mix for sure. So we'll talk a little bit more about that, Josh, but let's just start by just tell us a little bit about how you came to know fish, how you got into the band, that sort of thing.
Well, I had gone throughout my music discovery. I started off with classic rock. My mom had given me the band Yes. She gave me cassette tapes, and I just fell in love with that prog rock sound. And then I kind of evolved from Yes into kind of like death metal, Slayer, and that kind of thing, and started really getting into the heavy stuff, and then went into the grunge phase. And then as I was like, Pearl Jam is the best band ever, which I love them, my friend came in with Lawn Boy and said, you need to listen to this. And so I listened to, I remember Bathtub Gin and I remember Antelope, just stuck in my head. And I was just like, I have to go see this band. And so my first show ended up being in 94. And it changed my life, obviously. I mean, it was, and I got lucky with my first show. It was 7/8/94, which was the Great Woods Gamehenge.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That was my first show. My buddy said, come with me. Trust me. Just let's go. So we did.
Fortuitous first show.
Well, with it, we had already planned that week, though. The Grateful Dead were doing a show up at Highgate, Vermont, and it was like an overnight camping thing. And so we had already been planning on going up for that anyway. And so we ended up doing, within that first week of me seeing fish, I saw 7/8/7/9/7/10, then the Grateful Dead, and then 7/15 and 7/16 ending at Sugarbush. So I kind of got an awesome first week of jam in my life.
That's amazing. And so what were some of your first earliest memories, or were there particular memories from that show or your first couple shows when you really feel like you got it?
Well, for me, when I really got it was Lizards. That just felt like it. That whole ending jam of Lizards, that whole last part is just, that is ingrained in me. And you know, that I've got a bunch of fish tattoos, and the Lizards was one of the first ones that I ever got.
Nice.
So Lizards really holds a special place for me.
Cool. What a great song. I think they played that at my first show as well in fall of 95.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Can't get enough of it. So tell us a little bit about, like, so you're, you know, 94, you go to a couple shows and you're seeing, you know, the Dead and other music, of course. And how did it sort of evolve from there? Did you continue to see shows consistently until hiatus, or what was that sort of journey like?
For me, in those earlier years, I was a wedding planner in New England. And so my hometown is Keene, New Hampshire. So it's kind of the southwestern corner of New Hampshire. And pretty much anywhere they played in New England wasn't more than a 3-hour drive. So I had a good buddy of mine growing up that he would always say, hey, fish is playing tonight. We can get in. Let's go. And so we would randomly just go. And I'd drive home that night and be completely exhausted for work the next day, but that was fine. It was totally worth it. But so it kind of evolved into me going to as many shows as possible everywhere I could. And that was basically from 94, I'd say fall 94 through 1998 into 99. And that was just me seeing as many shows as I possibly could. And not only Phish. I mean, I love all types of music, so I will go see anything. It evolved into just going to as many shows as I could all the time.
Yeah. What were some of your like mid-90s, late 90s favorites in terms of, you know, looking back now? Are there shows that you went to that you still revisit today?
Okay, so one specifically is 12-11-95, Cumberland County Civic Center.
Oh, nice.
And
yeah.
That show for me, with the friends that I was with, the scene that was there, the show itself, I mean, My Friend, Ha 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 opener, two dog logs, that was the whole dog log album kind of joke with the
crowd. Right.
And that show, and then Warren Haynes. I remember looking at my buddy Jeff as soon as like Trey said, we're going to bring our friend Warren Haynes out. And I looked at him and just went, did he just say Warren? I mean, it was like slow motion. Did he just say Warren Haynes? And so that show right there was just kind of a culmination of my love for the band. It was just such a fun show. I'd say New Year's 95 was another crazy one. That was just start to finish. That's one of my favorite shows ever. And then I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan. So the Dark Side show was a huge one for me as well.
No yeah. way.
Yeah.
We didn't skip it. I don't think I know anyone personally who's been there. And I think on a recent episode, maybe it was on HF Pod Plus or on here, we discussed that that show. And I think the three of us who were on it were like, I don't think I know anyone who actually saw that show. That's pretty crazy. So yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about that show? Like, was it completely empty, mostly empty? What was it like?
I would say it was mostly empty. I mean, it was not as full as it should have been. But the energy in the room was off the charts. I mean, everybody that was there was just into it. And then when they started the first opening notes for Dark Side, it was just, I thought they were just going to do one, you know, one song, maybe two. And then they just kept going. And I was like, oh my God, this is happening. And it was just, I've got chills right now just talking about it. Not gonna lie, I'm a Nirvana fan, so when they came out with Smells Like Teen Spirit for the encore, I died. I was just like, that wins.
Yeah, you mentioned the grunge. I went through a grunge phase too. I think everybody did, you know.
Yeah.
part of the journey of the
90s.
You
kind of have to. Yeah.
So that's crazy. So then kind of dropped off a little bit or just the hiatus happened, and then did you get back into it for 2.0?
Yep, I did. Yep. And so I mean, again, I just saw as many shows as I could, whenever I could, you know? I mean, I was crying in the mud at Coventry, and then I didn't get to get back to Phish. I mean, they came back in 2009, and my first shows weren't until 2010, because life happens, you know? And so in 2010 is when I kind of got back on the train, if you will.
I will. I'll allow it. that's interesting, because I was also crying in the mud at Coventry. I think a lot of people were.
Yeah. I think I still have mud on me.
Yeah. Oh man, I had to throw my shoes away.
Oh yeah.
That was crazy. And how have you felt about the last couple of years? You know, just go to sort of the most recent, I don't know, 2013 on, what's your sort of take on where they are and where they've been and that sort of thing?
I love where they are. I feel like they've grown musically and, they're challenging themselves, and I love what they're doing right now. They look happy, and it looks like at this pace they could keep going for a long time. and that's what I want. I want for them to be happy on stage. I mean, it makes us happy, obviously, to be in the crowd and to be together and you know, singing along and raging and all that. But I want the band to be happy, because if they're happy, then this keeps going. You know, obviously, we don't ever want this to end, Fish. We want it to go on forever.
Yep.
But if they're happy, the band is happy doing what they're doing, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, definitely. And they clearly are. And you mentioned that you got to see the last, seven shows of Baker's Dozen, which is quite yes. quite a bit.
Some of the best playing I have seen them do ever.
Yeah. So I think we were at, so seven was nights 6 through 13 then.
Yep.
If I'm doing the math right. So the 28th was one of my favorites ever.
Okay. Yeah.
That Friday night.
Jimmy's night for me.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was so Matt, one of our co-hosts, that was his first Harpua ever.
Oh, awesome.
Super, super psyched about that. Yeah. What were some other highlights or sort of memories from Baker's Dozen for you?
The tweezer reprise, the energy in the room. I thought everybody was going to lift off the floor. That tweezer reprise when they just started kicking into that. And I actually took I don't know how I sat still enough, but I took a little video clip of like the first minute of it, and you can see the entire crowd. And I'm at the very, very back. I actually met a bunch of the Twitter tribe while I was at the show randomly at the back left corner of the floor. And I'm at the back with the video, and you can see the entire crowd slowly like getting, like jumping higher and getting bigger. And you could almost like see the energy getting bigger and bigger and bigger as they built up. I'll never forget that ever.
That's amazing. Cool. So you're obviously, you know, you've been seeing Fish for a really long time. And where do you think they go from here? Is there any, do you have any predictions or thoughts about, you know, 2018 or beyond?
I mean, if the Watkins Festival happens, I'll be there. I mean, that's great. I think I see them. I think like everybody thinks is that they'll do fewer shows, obviously, but they'll do more multi-night runs. I could see them do a few at the Gorge, and then, you know, maybe doing a couple in the Southeast, kind of like what they've been doing the last few years anyway. But I see them doing more multi-night runs at certain venues and people just traveling to see Fish and going to a destination kind of thing.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. I mean, did you go to either of the Mexicos?
Yeah. I did not. And I have friends that went, and they said it was amazing.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool, you know, things like that with maybe a little bit less a little bit less far, but you know, different cities and locales.
But if that keeps their tour schedule to a pace that they can handle and that they can still have a life, I mean, they need to have a life too. They're guys, you know what I mean? Like they're people. So if that keeps them to a point where they can still play shows, you know, a couple West Coast, a couple East Coast, a couple South, whatever, and then continue to play for years, do what you need to do.
Yeah. And it's interesting, 'cause there was like some, obviously a vocal minority as it were with of people who were, you know, like, I can't believe they're going back to MSG, and you know, you said about them sort of, you know, doing what they want and being happy is that's sort of the point, right? They have to do what works for them.
Exactly. I mean, this isn't about us, this is about them, and they're creating music. If they're in a bad place, you know, mentally or they're just torn too much and it's too hard on them and they can't see their families, the music is going to reflect that. And so for me, if they're happy and they're doing these shorter runs, I mean, you could tell how loose and how happy the vibe was from the band for the Baker's Dozen, because they didn't have to move their equipment. They didn't have to worry about traveling. They were set up shop.
Yeah.
So for me, like it seemed like that's how just loose. And that's why the music was just so on point for the entire Baker's Dozen run. I mean, it really was start to finish. That was just amazing.
Yeah, and they were obviously able to like you said, maybe concentrate a little bit more on the music, or at least focus a little bit more on what they you know, what they were doing on stage. And I know from hearing from the Mike interview and a couple other things, like clearly they were, you know, they were working hard. It wasn't like they were just going up and you know, not putting in any effort. But they were the 200 and whatever 37 songs or something. I mean, that's just, it's pretty incredible.
Unheard of.
Yeah.
What other band could do that? I mean, I don't know if any other bands really could.
Yeah, No, I don't think so.
I'm also partial to fish, so you
Yeah, of course,
know.
as are we on this fish podcast. So, let's talk a little bit about your. I know that you have a profession, sort of day job, but you have a passion for yoga, as do I. And I don't consider myself, a yogi by any standards, but I discovered it a few years ago, on recommendation from my wife and my friend Zach and a couple others. And it's really kind of changed the way that I see exercise and health and all that. I used to just run. So the past 3 years or so, totally changed my outlook. But that's why I was excited to kind of chat with you about this. But I know you have a lot more probably depth of experience and perspective on it. How did you first get into yoga?
Well, from 2007 to 2010, I was going through a really, really, really rough patch. And in about 2010, I mean, I'd kind of hit like a really, really, really bad spot. And at that point, a friend of mine said, "Hey, why don't you try hot yoga?" And sparing you the details, but I was like, "All right, kind of a last-ditch effort kind of thing." And I went and tried hot yoga, and I cried for half the class. And
Wow.
then I went back the next day, did it again, and went every day for the first 4 months. Literally got on my mat every day for the first 4 months.
Wow.
And so there's a couple of heart opening back bend postures that they just open you up. And I was literally in tears, but it was okay that I was in tears because it just lo looked like my eyes were sweating. And I tell my students this too. It's like, you know what? I spent the first 4 months of my practice in that back far corner of the room, bawling my eyes out, and that was okay because I was releasing something. But then after that 4 month period or so, I got back to me. And so for me, yoga literally saved my life. It really, really saved my life.
Wow.
And for the next month, I was looking into teacher training programs because if yoga can do that for me, then I want to be able to help other people, even just like a little teeny bit of what it did for me. And if I have the opportunity to do that, I'm going to do that. And so that's why that same fall of 2010, I enrolled in the teacher training program, and I was teaching it by the end of 2010.
Wow, that's amazing. So, obviously, not to get into the details, but that sort of alone or yoga kind of just helped you sort of get things in perspective in order to correct whatever else you had going on.
Well, so it was a situational thing where I was literally just, I shut everything out for about 3 years from 2007 to 2010. And at the point, like, I'm not a depressed person because I'm super bubbly and happy all the time. But in that situation, the doctor had me on some crazy, like, medications and stuff that just, made me feel worse. Yoga made me feel better. And so as I was taking these yoga classes, I was forgetting to take medication and stuff. And then all of a sudden, it was like I hadn't taken medication in a month. And I felt amazing. So yoga literally saved my life.
That's awesome. That's great to hear. And
Yes.
I know that there's, a lot of crossover, between these two topics, yoga and fish, of course. But what's the journey been like, kind of integrating the two?
For me, it's about freedom. And it's about freedom to be yourself, whether you are at a concert wearing a cape and a tutu or a wig or whatever, party clothes, or if you are on your yoga mat and in the class that you're in, you just need to lay down because that's just what you feel for the day, you've got freedom. And one of the best parts about yoga for me is it doesn't matter where you are in a posture, it just matters that you are. There's every master had their first day on a yoga mat, and we all start somewhere. So that's what I tell people is well, I don't want to go to yoga because I'm not flexible. Well, I say, well, that's like a kid saying, I'm not going to go to kindergarten because I can't read, right? So for me, I've gotten a lot of my friends to come try yoga and actually fall in love with it because I'm just like, just come get on your mat. I don't care if you lay in the room the entire time, just come check it out. And so once I can get them in there and get them comfortable with getting into a studio, they feel a little bit better about it. But for me, the freedom to be you, and that's what I've always felt at Fish. I've always not use it as an escape necessarily, but it's a place where I can go and I can just be with a bunch of people that are not strangers, but friends I haven't met yet. And yoga is the same way. It gives me freedom.
Yeah, that's interesting because there's we did a survey over the summer of just asking people what fish meant to them, and there was a lot of stuff that I read in there in this, you know, people's responses. We got over 100 responses. People saying that they, you know, it made them, Phish makes them feel, you know, free and open and more general happiness and positivity and that sort of thing, which I think people that I know who practice, you know, have the exact same sort of feeling. So there is a lot of crossover.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, Phish music, I can listen to when I'm doing anything. And for me, like Phish with yoga, it works because it gets me pumped up and makes me happy, even happier than I am to be on my mat, you know, which is pretty happy anyway. So then on top of that, you add Phish into the yoga and it's my joy.
Musically, do you use music for all your classes or only some, or how does that work? Because we're going to obviously talk a little bit more about this playlist, which hopefully you'll be able to use at some point, but how do you approach?
Oh yeah, I'm going to. Yeah.
Being someone who loves music, how do you approach that with the different kinds of classes?
Well, with the different kinds of classes, you want something to match the class, obviously. And I've got to be a little bit careful because as much as I'm a self-proclaimed Phish freak, most of my students probably are not. I mean, we've got Vanderbilt universities right there, so we get a lot of Vanderbilt students, and most of them have never heard of Phish. But it's kind of a personal win when they come out of class and they're like, well, what were some of those songs you were playing? Those were really good. It's like, yes, those are Phish. Let me write them down for you. Let me get you into them.
Yeah.
But so, you know, I use a lot of gentle kind of electronic music as well. Like Pretty Lights is a good one. Just kind of real groovy, kind of flowy, Break Science kind of stuff. And so I'll use some of that as well. But for me, I love Phish with yoga. And I've done a all restorative playlist, which is just real, real like chill. I call it sloth yoga, which is perfect as sloth. And it's just on the floor. It's just chill. So I did like a whole studio Phish slow songs playlist.
Nice.
Which is pretty cool. And that was really just nice and chill and good to do the yoga with as well.
Yeah, that's the one thing for me, because I'm, you know, obviously a huge, huge music fan. And when I go, and I go to a sort of chain place that, you know, it's hot and it's more exercise than, you know, than yoga.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But I mean, the music is, I'm sure that there are people who go who like the music, but a lot of times to me, it's just sort of like, man, why don't they take more, you know, creativity with this? But one class several weeks ago, a woman, her entire 60-minute playlist was all Radiohead, which I thought was really cool because it worked really well.
That's
and it was, you know, it was, yeah, it was pretty cool. But by and large, you know, that's just not how these things sort of, you know, work.
No. I've heard top 40 music in yoga classes, and that just kind of takes my heart out of it.
Right, that's not what you're going for.
Right.
So, well, let's talk a little bit about this playlist, because listeners can look in the show notes and see the tracks. And Josh, you and I went back and forth. I think I had been thinking for a long time about a playlist for a 60-minute vinyasa class, and the only thing that I could think of was the 11/17/97 Ghost. That, you know, just like that's what I want to like live life to generally. But and people can look at the tracks in the show notes, but we have a mix that flows together really well. But tell us a little bit about how you kind of thought about those different tracks.
Well, the different tracks for me, with the exception of 12/13, the Chalk Dust, and the What's the Use, I was at the rest of the shows, and
they're awesome.
They're all some of my favorite song versions of them. And for me, like the opener, Soul Shakedown, I mean, that's what my yoga mat is for me. It's a soul shakedown party, and you know, for me on the mat. And so that just, I thought, was just such a light, awesome opener for the list, because I love that too. I love them playing that.
That is great, and that's something that we don't hear too often anymore. And as you get sort of further into it, I mean, I guess as if people who aren't as familiar, as we get into it a little bit, there's some funk and there's some bliss jams and there's some grooves, and you know, I think you did a great job of kind of varying it up in different kinds of music. But how does the kind of flow, you know, pun intended, work in terms of the actual kind of musical choices? Like if people aren't familiar with yoga, how does it build up for people who are familiar with Phish, but maybe not how these classes work?
Well, I kind of take it like a peek. So if you're starting at the class, you're starting class, you're kind of getting warmed up, you're setting your intention, and then you start to ramp it up. And I kind of feel like it kind of goes up into, like, if you looked at a visual chart, it would be an upside down capital letter V. And so you kind of come up to a peak, and then you kind of bring it back down as you slow the class down to end it. So for me, it was warming up, working out core, getting warmed up. Then you start to get into the flow. You hit the peak of the flow, and then you start to slow the flows down to the other side. And then you do a deep stretch at the end, and then you do Savasana where it kind of calms it back down. So for me, it really is like a big peak and a valley kind of thing.
Nice. Yeah, that's great. And that's it's not that different from like an awesome set of music, right?
Exactly. That's kind of how I plan it around, like kind of like that. Yeah, I'm also a musician, so that for me plays into my mind when I'm doing that kind of thing.
Nice. And for people who are listening who've never done yoga before or who haven't, you know, gotten into it, what's your advice for people as you know who come to your class for the first time to, I don't know, just what do you say to people in terms of trying it or sticking with it or you know, what's your advice?
Yoga is for everybody. It doesn't matter where you come from, what you look like, who you are, how old you are. None of that matters at all. Yoga is for everybody. It does, like I said, it doesn't matter where you are in a posture. It just matters that you are. So if you're there, you're giving effort, you get benefits. Like people, yes, I can kick up at a standing split now, but when I first started yoga, I couldn't touch my toes. Now I can touch my toes with my forehead down behind me in a back bend. And so, I've just been a big guy and not been able to be flexible. But now I am. Practice doesn't make perfect because there's no such thing as perfect mm-hmm. in yoga. Practice makes happy.
That's awesome. And that's, it's interesting because that's similar advice that you give to someone going to their first fish show, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Just go, just check it out. You'll love it.
Yeah.
And even if it's, crazy and you don't quite get it at first and it's too much, go back, do it again. Same thing with yoga. Do it again. Just keep at it and try it. Give it a little bit of time. Don't just drop off, right? You know, don't drop right off with it. Like give it a shot, get right into it and then see from there. And then you'll probably fall in love with it.
Nice. Have you seen any like groups around either online or offline that combine yoga and fish? Are there, you know, anything like that?
To be honest with you, I haven't.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking I need to start now.
Yeah. It's interesting. There might be maybe local, you know, in different cities. I haven't either. I haven't seen anything. And maybe that's just because I haven't stumbled upon it. But it seems like there should be more, right? Because I'd love to.
That should be a thing.
Yeah.
That should be a thing. Yeah, but if you have injuries or, you know, heartache, or go try yoga. It really cures you. And it doesn't matter what it is that you have, it really cures you.
Awesome. Well, Josh, this has been a fun conversation and appreciate you putting together this this playlist. And I hope people enjoy it and listen to it and hopefully, you know, think a little bit more about trying yoga if they haven't yet. So everyone should follow Josh on Twitter. It's Yogi Josh Kenobi.
Yep.
Cool. Make sure I got that right. Thank you for joining, Josh, and for talking to us about your journey and about this this awesome overlap between fish and yoga.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Cool. All right, so we're going to get straight into the music. It's about a 60-65 minute playlist, so you'll see the tracks in the show notes. But as always, we encourage you to just listen to it, and you can look back at the tracks later. And if you haven't yet, give us a review on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at HFPod. And if you have thoughts, questions, comments, feedback, ideas, email us at helpingfriendlypodcast@gmail.com. So until next time, keep on rocking.
to my 10 minutes, and then toss the chair in a tiny shack. I'm talking out the words as I zoom back, but I listen to the sitting in your portrait of your past. There's a mummy in the closet. Are there no more arrows left? What's that rubber bottle doing here? How's that napkin for a roof? 10 cents to $1 now for a shelf of pregnant hands. Robert Palmer is a poor, but Gans are so stupendous. Living in this tomb, so stupendous. Living in this tomb. So stupendous, living in this tomb. It's so stupendous.
I want.